In this episode of the Texas Private School Podcast, Parrish caps off their season with their sixth state title in seven straight trips. All Saints survives an early scare from Second Baptist as Gavin Beard, Hudson Rezor, and Kingston Byer go out as champions. Lubbock Christian behind the efforts of Jace Jackson take down the perennial title favorites in Dallas Christian, and the coin leads me astray as Dallas First Baptist puts away the Eagles of Brazos Christian behind three touchdowns from Lincoln Schleif. All this and more in the state recap of the Texas Private School Podcast. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Texas Private School Podcast, the final weekly recap episode of the season. I, as always, am one quarter of your hosting crew for this episode, Wes Tolleson, calling in from Sunnyvale, Texas. I now feel much more scared considering my location following some of the events from state. We'll get into that later. Walker Lott calls in from College Station, B. Bateman from College Station, and Bradley Hanna from Houston, Texas. Again, well, I guess I should say, B, this is your first time on the program. Bradley called in last week, did a tremendous job, so you now have a high standard to live up to as far as the intern's performances go. But number one, thank you so much for your contributions at State. B has been one of our top-performing interns throughout the entire year, has done a tremendous job. You've seen her on camera multiple times, just not in a seated hostess chair for an episode. So, B, number one, thank you for your efforts at State. Ton of great content there. Number one, how have you been? Number two, your thoughts on what was an incredibly exciting weekend of Taps football.
I've been great. Thanks for asking. You know what? It was an exciting weekend. Going to Brazos Christian, obviously going to the state game is one of the most exciting parts of the entire school year. Obviously, we didn't get the win, but that's okay. But it was honestly a great experience. I think Bradley would say this too. It was one of the most fun weekends I've probably ever had. Just getting to see everybody and getting to do interviews and just being at a football game or four football games really was, it was so much fun.
That's awesome. And see, again, I want to make it known that I said we have intern meetings with the whole squad every week. And I said like 2 or 3 weeks leading up to state, like, listen, I know it sounds corny and I know it sounds like propaganda from a guy, you know, that helps move the company. But like state is one of our favorite weekends of the entire year, dude. It's so fun. The camaraderie more than anything, getting to interact with all these people we've just seen boxes on screens throughout the entire year is super, super rewarding. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Bradley Hanna, outside of your homer favorite in Dallas Christian not getting the win over Lubbock Christian, how did you enjoy the weekend at State?
I mean, I had a great weekend. It's always fun getting to go up to Waco and see everyone. Of course, I had to make the drive up with fellow intern Rhett Terrell. He's just 30 minutes from my house, so I picked him up. We head up there for on the 3-hour drive, but it's always fun. It's cool that you can say you covered four football games in 2 days. And then besides that, it's just fun hanging out with everyone else. And then made the drive back, listened to the college football playoff selection, which I was very happy about. So I don't know, just a great weekend overall. And yeah, how about y'all?
No, I think so. Yeah, it was an incredibly fun time. I made the decision to drive back. I think most of the crew drove back on Sunday morning following the games, and all of y'all did. I think Ryan might have been the only other person besides me that took a prolonged drive back on Saturday night. And listen, I do that every year. I never like spending the night and driving in the morning. And I think I'm really getting old because that drive kicked my butt. Like I slept until like 11 in the morning on Sunday morning. But Walker, it's always one of our favorite weekends of the year. We even got some, you know, an upset, a game that we thought wasn't going to be close. I was close for a while. And then a defensive stalwart in a game where we thought the two offenses would be the best on the field. Out of everything that happened at State, your thoughts on what was an incredibly fun weekend?
Dude, it was awesome. We have fun every week, every year we do this, and it feels like it just gets more and more fun as the years go on. I want to say I think that is our – in terms of four games at State – can you agree with me? I think those are the best four games we've covered at a state totally since we've done this. I feel like it has to be the answer. It's two close games, one game that was close
for a while,
right? And then the second, the first Baptist Brazos game, I think it was 20 points or something like that at the end. But like, There were still a lot of things happening in that one, both sides of the ball, like for both
And even
teams.
in the worst, yeah, I was going to say, and even in the worst game, I think it's the most combined points in a championship game in history or something like that. We'll get to that later. But again, it was incredibly fun. We pumped out a ton of content. I haven't gone back over the numbers yet, but I think we cleared a million views on the weekend. I mean, and again, that's not just the testament to the work we put in this season, but we don't do this without people like Bradley B, Jaden Villarreal, Jake Garcia, Allie Meyer, Rhett Terrell, Sean O'Reilly, all the people that joined us at State. Walker, please tell me if I'm missing somebody. But and not just the people at State, but all of the other interns that have contributed through the season. We're incredibly grateful for
Oh, yeah.
y'all. If we didn't take a moment to shout you out on air, we wouldn't be doing our jobs correctly. So thank you. That being said, we're going to get into the meat of the episode and recapping each of the four state title games we got to cover, but not before we release some breaking news that is happening across the state. We have two big coaching changes, hires, resigns, etc., that have taken place within the last couple of days. The first of which is out of Houston Second Baptist, where 3 short years after Beck Bryden was announced as the head coach coming over from Austin Regents, where he's the architect really of that culture of Regents, he has announced his resignation, relatively shockingly to my knowledge, as defensive coordinator Keith Page has been promoted to their head coach. So, walk a lot. This is big. There's no other way to put it. I mean, this is coming less than a week after a state title game was played at Second Baptist. We didn't have any indication that Coach Bryden was leaving. Again, not going to speculate or anything, but what does this mean for Houston Second Baptist in a vacuum?
I mean, this is an absolute shock. I don't know how else to say it. I know we've said in the article when he first moved over there last year, last week when we talked about the Second Baptist team. When you think of culture in private school, one of the best that is always around a team is Beck Bryden. What he did at Regents, he established the Regents' power when he literally started the football program at that school from six man on, moving over there and, you know. I mean, he went 26-15, 11-3 in district, two straight Taps D2 state title appearances and one semifinal appearance. I mean, there's not many coaches that like a better resume than that in 3 seasons. And he's gone. And it's a crazy thing, you know, the press release from the school said he resigned immediately, which is, I think, something to note. You don't usually see that without something going on behind the scenes, and that's interesting to watch, but we won't speculate more than that. I think it's said in there that Keith Page has been around the Second Baptist School for a very long time, so it's a welcome face, a familiar face, and I think he'd do a heck of a job. DC, you know, you saw their defense last week against All Saints. Hold them pretty well in the first half and do some special things. So I think as hires go, I think it'll be a fine one. But the story is really him leaving. I mean, this is kind of a shock. He's one of the best to do it. I mean, you can talk. He might not be on the Mount Rushmore of Texas private school coaches right now, but he's close up there. He's in the top 15 for sure. He is one of the best to do it, and it's a shock. I don't know where he'll end up. We're monitoring this. This literally announced this morning. It's a crazy thing, but I mean, I have a lot of respect for Beck Bryden and how he handles his football teams. If you told me how the season started, we'll talk about it later in this the Second Baptist team, but this season started crazy and ended up going what it was at 7-8 straight to make a state title game. I mean, that's insane, and that's a testament to him and his coaching staff. So I don't know where he'll end up. I don't know if he'll end up back in private school if he coaches again, but he's a great dude. Always appreciative of what he's done for us at Second Baptist. It was always a welcome, always a welcome with open arms when we went out down there, and it was always a good thing. So great dude. Thank you for everything, and excited to see how that ends up. And
Definitely so. Bradley Hanna, I'll cut to you just because you share a district with Second Baptist. I want to know your inside thoughts on this regarding the shakeup of a culture at a school that has been a dominant force in that division for a long time.
Yeah, having to watch the Second Baptist team since Bryden got there has been scary, I'll say. I mean, they win state, or they don't win state. They win the district his first year. They go 5-0 in district. Then his second year, they have a surprising second place in district because Fort Bend kind of came out of nowhere. They go 4-1. And then this year, in a down year at the beginning, but they still end up making the state championship. Like, I mean, that kind of shows something, like the level of adversity and like grit that this Second Baptist team has had under Beck Bryden. So it's definitely a surprise, especially since this second team has been very successful under his coaching. So, and only just 3 years, like that's the big thing. I think I kind of expected Coach Bryden to be there a little longer and definitely like get this second team their title because I don't, what was it? They haven't had it since like 99. So I don't know. This, I was surprised for sure, especially because I get to see Second Baptist play every single year coming from Fort Bend.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely a spot when we saw this announced that you're like, okay, this is at least a decade long move. And again, you never know the pieces that are moving behind the scenes, but I really don't think this is anything due to on-field performance. Obviously, it's not since he resigned. But again, all that being said, it's going to be really interesting. I know Keith Page is highly regarded around the Second Baptist program. I'm sure they're in good hands there. And again, it's Second Baptist. The likelihood that they fall apart under any circumstance is relatively low in the near future. But we're going to move into the second piece of coaching news that is big and that Walker is going to have a very, very fun time speaking to. Jeff Dixon is retiring at Southwest Christian, and that means former Aledo athletic director and head coach Steve Wood is now being hired as the new head coach. Walker Lott, 21 total years at Aledo, contributed to 11 state championships and also served as the head coach from 2014 to 2019. He amassed a record of 75-4. You think of Titletown, you think of Steve Wood. This is very, very big. And we see a lot of coaches basically go from the public school ranks to the private school ranks as a quote unquote retirement job. I don't even care if this, I don't think it's a retirement job for Steve Wood, even if it is. It's one of the biggest splashes we've seen in coaching news in recent memory. What does this mean for Southwest Christian? Yeah, I mean, you took a lot of my information. Good job, and kind of made me have to think through this. But it's a slam dunk hire. Like you said, when there is two routes usually private school coaches, private school ADs go for their head coach. They either go the up and coming young coordinator or head coach that has a lot of hype and things around them, and then kind of works up their ranks to the head coaching job, and has a bright future ahead of them and brings energy into a program, or they go to the retired public school coach route that comes over, brings some pedigree and experience to a program that's kind of already maybe established and just needs some discipline to get them back to the top, right? And they went the second route, and man, I don't know if you could do a better job than that. When you think of Aledo, you think of Titletown. Coach Wood has been there forever too. When you think Coach Buck is, Coach Buck's the football field is named after Coach Buck. The athletic complex is named after Coach Wood. These are the two guys who built Titletown to where it's now called Titletown, right? 11 state championships. And I was speaking from a guy from Fort Worth. Aledo is 16 miles down the road from SES. I did the math on that because it's a guy who knows Southwest Fort Worth, West Fort Worth, right? I mean, half the families from SES, not half, but a good amount of them probably live in Aledo city limits. Like it's a culture that he'll be familiar with, people that he'll be familiar with. I think it's a slam dunk. SES, since Flowers stepped down from head coach and went more of an administrative role when they went back to back in 2021 on state semifinal appearances, they kind of needed to get just changed. The record was bad. Three straight first round playoff exits by I think a score of 159-9. Not great at all. So they needed some energy. They needed a guy who knows how to win, and there's not a better winner in the Fort Worth area, greater Fort Worth area, and honestly, Texas high school football history than Coach Wood. So I'm very excited about it. I'm very excited to see what his staff is. I think that's an interesting part. Who does he retain? Who does he bring in? Because he's the winner. He's not going to be a guy who's going to be there for 15, 20 years, right? But he'll be there for the next 5 to 10. And how does that correlate? And how does he build a program and get guys to the next era of SES football? I think it's a slam dunk, man. This is a guy who knows this area, knows the city of Fort Worth really well. And being real, something to note is that All Saints and them at Aledo have had many transfers over the years, right? When a starting quarterback at Aledo happens, probably the backups at All Saints. This happens all the time over the years, right? Hamfe, Gavin Beard, Hoss Haney, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? It goes back and forth a lot of times. That same thing with Gavin Beard, starters there. He's now at Aledo. It's now at All Saints, right? So, If I was a coach coming from Alito, I'd want to beat All Saints, which I think is the best thing about it, right? Am I going to think that they're going to turn around in 1 year and beat All Saints by 40? No. But I'm excited with a guy that has the mentality of, like, I want to beat the top dog, because Alito and All Saints are not unfamiliar with each other. And I think that's a pretty cool thing. So I think it's a slam dunk hire. I'm excited about his coaching staff. He has some pieces to build around with some senior classes. His quarterback comes back. Slade Evans, the running back, comes back, and you have two talented freshmen, Crosby Pipes and Malcolm Anderson, to build around going into their sophomore years next year. I don't see a negative to it. You know, we've always complained, and me especially, about how do you not give the young private school offensive coordinators a chance to go get head coaching jobs? And this would be a perfect one to do it. But when you go the other route, you can't do better than this guy, and I'm very excited about that. So I'll get off my SES bandwagon. Fly, Eagles, fly. You cannot have that. I cannot hide that Eagle pride in the people from there. We'll get that reference. So
There we go.
very, very excited.
Yeah, and again, I'm not going to speak long on it because you couldn't detail it better than that. I'm incredibly interested to see if there is a recruiting war that ensues because, like you mentioned, Alito is kind of All Saints territory right now. And at the time being, a lot of that All Saints recruiting pitch is, hey, if you want to come play college football, you're going to All Saints. It's going to take more than just like one or two stabs at it to uproot something that's deeply established in that district. And then you think, this is a district where a bunch of these teams looked a lot better this year. I know they SCS beat Faith, but Faith added pieces. Fort Worth Christian obviously got better. TCS is TBCS, and then All Saints. But and then Midland Christian's obviously there too. I say all that to say is this is the District of Doom in Taps Division Two. It's not a situation where there are some districts in the land where I think you add a head coach, immediately everything's all right. It's going to be interesting. I think this is a great first step. I want to see if you get rid of the wing tee and maybe add a more modern offense, for lack of a better term. I know I sound like somebody that's young and ignorant saying that, but I think that is kind of a step to get
No,
moving
yeah.
into 2025.
No,
But
we need to. I think in the when the seasons, the 2020 and the 2021, when we had a great running back and great quarterback in Tyson Flowers at the time, and we had a good defense. It was awesome. It was great because we had an offensive lineman to back it up. But as you've seen over the years, if you didn't have Trey Mosley this year, I don't even know what this offense looks like this year. And so I like Slade Evans, and you have a star running back returning next year, but you need to shift it up. If you spread the ball out a little bit, have Slade Evans not have seven in the box to run against, could be interesting. This could be something special this year. So I would love for them to modernize the offense. I think that also plays into the role of, like, you have a head coach that is a glorified winner in every sense of the word, right? And that attracts a lot of prospective athletes and prospective families to come into a place that their head coach knows how to win. And if you modernize the offense, that makes it even better. So, literally, if you're in Fort Worth, just being real, Fort Worth has a history in the past 15, 20 years of not being. If you're in Fort Worth ISD or greater area of Fort Worth, you're not winning a state title, right? It's Alito in 16 miles that way, or and recently it's North Crowley, right? With the hiring of Ray Gates and what he's done over there in that program. But besides that, Crowley's okay. South Hills was good for a while, but not anymore. Arlington Heights made the second round this year. But literally, besides that, All Saints is probably usually the number one school in Fort Worth. And if you're any other school in that area, why couldn't you want to come to SES and be coached by one of the best to ever do it? So.
exactly. It'll be interesting to see how that materializes. Again, my personal thoughts are it's a fantastic hire for Southwest Christian. We're going to see how that plays out, in just a few short months before football kicks back up, come May. That being said, we're now going to move into the first of our four games to recap from the weekend. And we started off on Friday morning, a very cold endeavor with Parrish versus Prestonwood, a game that did not warrant as much offense as I thought. But once you think a little bit more deeply about this, and have we spoken the entire year, I said from the jump about after the All Saints game, the Parrish defense looked much more impressive than it did in previous years. And then Prestonwood just having maulers like Cam Pettijohn, Kaylor Bettijohn, Eddie Brownstein, so many good pieces, Ty Gilday. And you're like, okay, so maybe it makes a bit more sense this game ended 14-7. Bradley Hanna, you were on site, you were live tweeting, you were watching. What stuck out to you in this game, where Parrish just narrowly edged Prestonwood to get their sixth title in 7 seasons?
Yeah, I think the crazy thing is that, as you mentioned, we expected a bunch of offense, especially with these teams. I think they average over 40 points a game, both teams. But like, it was kind of wild, especially when you see like they have so many weapons. Like Jalen Pyle, he was only limited to one catch. Maybe it was the biggest catch of the game, biggest catch of the season for Parrish, coming on a 4th and 14 on the game-winning drive. So I don't know, but like when you limit Jalen Pyle to only one catch for 30-something yards, you kind of expect to win that game. But Parrish made it hard for them. Honestly, I was really impressed with Parrish's defense, which is what I think what surprised me most. Of course, the Pettijohns were making plays for Preston Wood, but I think the biggest story has to go down to Parrish's defense. Of course, that game-winning interception, then the pass breakup at the end. It was just an all-out performance from both sides defensively, but ultimately Parrish runs away with it.
Yeah, no, it was an incredibly impressive performance by a defense that is so vastly improved from last year. I don't want to trash on their defense last year too much because it's kind of hard to limit a team under 45 points when your offense scores in three plays every single drive. But I mean, this year, whether it was Connor Corn, whether it was Jesse Richardson, there's another linebacker that I'm thinking of or defensive lineman that I'll come up with later. But that being said, there's whether it's Chase Burton, Kingston Thornton, so many good players on that defense, and ultimately holding an offense of Will Taylor, Luke Glass, Junior Niffin, AJ Morreale to 7 points is a very, very good outcome. B. Bateman, you were also live and on site for this game. What did you think as we watched Preston Wood stave off, Parrish stave off Preston Wood to win their sixth state title in 7 years?
Yeah, I mean, surprisingly, Bradley didn't mention this, but I think special teams was kind of the point of the game that we were all a little surprised by before we were watching. I think their kicker went down, and we were all surprised on what was going to happen and making bets on if he was going to come back in or not. But for sure, like Bradley said, it was a game of the defenses for sure. Connor Corwin had 12 tackles, and I got to interview him afterwards. So just getting to see him like play probably the best game he's had all season. And really it was just Parrish's defense. They came out and they made those stops that really mattered. Definitely in the fourth quarter for sure. But I mean the Pettijohn brothers from Preston Wood, it's hard to say they're not some of the best players on the field, but they just kind of got stood up a little bit. But it was really an interesting game. I think we all were expecting it to be a really high scoring game, and it wasn't. I think some of us were a little bored at some points, but I think it was a great game, a great Division I game for sure. And it was a defensive game. That's all I really have to say.
And I'm
When
looking right now, and I was gonna say I can't believe I'm trying to find the kicker's name, and I feel
okay, I got
bad.
it for
Yeah,
you. Preston
what's his name?
Gall,
It is Preston
GAL.
Gall. So I'm so glad you brought that up, B, because quite literally, what this is the sequence of events as I was keyed into it. I'm driving to Waco. I'm a bit late because I don't have my stuff together, even though I've done this for 5 years. Ryan sends us a text and says Preston Wood kicker hurt in pregame. Might
Parrish
be a big
kicker.
deal. Parrish, sorry, Parrish kicker. I can't do two P names in the same preview. It's literally driving me insane. Parrish kicker injured in pregame. So many P words. Parrish kicker injured in pregame, not Preston Wood. That being said, I was like, interesting. So then we come out. Gall tries to kick. I think it's an extra point. It's not a field goal. And he goes down. He like collapses after he kicks it. We're like, well, that doesn't look good. And then basically a conversation ensues between me on one side and then Walker B, Bradley, and I think everyone else on the other side, to where I say he's not coming back. Or I initially said he's not coming back for the next drive because or for the next field goal try or whatever, because he just died. And everyone's like, yeah, he's going to be the one kicking the next extra point because it's the state game. And I'm like, I don't think you understand human anatomy. He cannot put weight on that leg. That being said, he did not come back for the next extra point or field goal until the end of the game. I think they missed the one on the ensuing drive, actually.
Yeah,
And
back
then
up.
we get to the end of the game. Parrish scores after Preston Wood ties it up 7-7. Parrish scores and make it 13-7 after that drive that had the Lucero to Pyle connection, which was an insane play in its own right. And all of a sudden, Preston Gall comes trotting back on the field. Walker B and Bradley trying to take this as an opportunity to clown me. I say it wasn't part of the bet, but the more important thing was he's trotting out in the field. Gall goes up, kicks it, boots it through the upright, and immediately collapses back on the turf. And I'm like, that might be the most badass thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I didn't know a kicker could do anything that could be classified as badass, but that was awesome. It was an incredible moment from the weekend. I didn't really expect to dedicate like 50% of my words on this game to the kicker, but shout out to Preston Gall. That was incredible. Walk.
I mean his 2 extra points. I mean, if you think about it, right? If the Preston was driving at the end of the game and had the PBU at the end of the call game, of course, for Parrish, and but they were at the 15 trying to score. If they get a touchdown and they kick an extra point, they win that game. So like literally he almost won, like he would have won them that game with those 2 extra points. So shout out to him, man.
No,
There
he
were
did. I
three missed kicks in that entire game. Like B said, it was like big special teams game, but when you have three missed kicks in a D1 game, kind of just tells you something. I mean, we had backup kickers from both sides, I think. I don't know. It was wild, but honestly, like points are points. Like those field goals could have completely changed the game and how you game plan for the rest of the game.
In a game that ends 14-7, yeah, you're absolutely right. Any point matters at that point in time. And it's interesting just because there wasn't like, I mean, the offensive production was low, but even Coach Novikov mentioned in his interview, this didn't feel like a game that was 14-7. Both teams were driving. Parrish had almost 300 yards of total offense. Prestonwood had 263. Will Taylor, who, by the way, we've mentioned a decent amount on this season. Will Taylor is one of the most consistent seasons I have ever seen from a running back. And the word consistent doesn't sound sexy, but by consistent, I mean he's going for like 160 yards per game, every game. Book it. It's in the works. He went for where was it? Will Taylor went for 25 rushes, 132 yards. My math is it's like 5.5 yards per carry. Walker, he's a freak. He has been so consistent. I don't know how he can have as many touches as he did on the year and still basically be moving at the end of the season. What did you see from this game? Because I have one point I want to hit on at the end of the game that is interesting, but in terms of the
Okay,
overall
you're gonna hit
performance.
that. You're gonna hit that at the end of the game.
You can I'll let you take it.
No. I'll say this. I think also like how many 4th and goal stops were there in this game? I think at least 2 by Prestonwood too. Like it would have been a wholly different game if Prestonwood doesn't get. I think they had them stop twice on 3 straight times on the 3rd and goal or like 1st and goal. Right. It's a testament to this Prestonwood defense for keeping them in this game for so long. I mean, yeah, limiting the pile to only 1 reception for 26 yards. Beckham Smith was the best receiver of the night with 5 for 57. I don't know how many 10-yard comebacks that I saw from Beckham Smith in that game, but there were many of them. Jonathan Phillips had his both sides. I mean, Luke Glass was dealing at the end of the game. The bobbled catch that AJ Morial made to go and try to extend this drive. I mean, there were so many cool things in this game that, yes, overall, the scoreboard doesn't show electric stuff, but things happen in that game to sustain drives. The 4th down or 3rd and long run by Logan Lucero at the end of the game to get the 1st down to extend the drive to go win the game. I mean, that shows how good this kid's gonna be, man. He has the intangibles, the instincts of like, look, 1, 2, 3, nothing down there, find a lane and go. And the how he found the lane is sensational, man. And he's gonna be a heck of a player for the 3 more years. And I just they're lucky to have him and Jonathan Phillips coming back. That's something to know, and we'll talk about the future of both these teams in a second. But Wes, let's talk about the thing at the end of the game, which is a very interesting point. There was after looking, we heard reports, and we didn't really know at the beginning, but it was true. There was 12 men on the field for Parrish at the end of that game, the last play of the game. If I remember correctly, Prestonwood was around on the Parrish 20 with 3 seconds left, 4th down, trying to just make something happen down 7. Kingston Thornton does it the drive before, gets the interception, right? This drive, it's a Kingston Thornton PBU to seal it right on the last play of the game, but.
And by the way, the only reason that Prestonwood's even in as good a position as they are is that whenever Parrish punts the ball back to Preston Wood, I think it's Kingston Thornton that absolutely spears a dude on the punt cover. Like the ball doesn't even get to him. And he got his money's worth out of that hit. I don't even know if there is targeting in high school football. That was the textbook definition of it, but that's part of it. So Kingston Thornton is involved in basically three defining plays in three separate drives.
Yeah. And yeah, the report is that 12 men on the field for Parrish for that drive, but refs didn't catch it. They had one extra defender and they stopped the thing. Of course, that's.
I also want to say my point of view from this
Yeah,
moment. I'm going to
awesome.
talk very carefully here because I feel like this might get somebody sent to my house. But basically, I'm on the sideline. Remember, I'm shooting pictures, and I don't realize this until after the game. Obviously, I'm not counting the people on the field because I'm trying to get my aperture, my ISO, and all that stuff right. So I'm sitting there. And I'm trying to like look through the lens, and all of a sudden, there's a lot of commotion around me, and there's somebody by the sidelines, and he's looking like he's about to go on the field. He's not. Somebody that looks like he may or may not be a coach is like saying like yes no, and I'm like, what's going on? And all of a sudden he shoots out on the field. I'm like, well, that's a weird time to send somebody on the field. I guess I should keep taking pictures. Turns out that was the decision that was made to send the 12th person onto the field, allegedly. All this is alleged. I don't think I actually saw anything. Parish Episcopal, please keep people away from my residence. Corey Thomas's dad is already knocking on my door. That being said, at the end of the day, it was not the type of game that we expected to see, but it's a type of game that deeply established programs win. You got to shout out Coach Novikov for from the beginning of the season, basically understanding that you don't need just one quarterback. I can run with two quarterbacks. Both of these guys are selfless. They have no ego. We're going to do very specific things with both of them. They can do anything. And we saw Jonathan Phillips and Logan Lucero have the best tandem quarterback season I've seen since I've started covering the sport. You also have a shout out to Marcus Hainish, who had a fantastic year. And then the entirety of the Prestonwood or the Parrish defense. It was an incredibly, incredibly fun game to watch. That also made me just realize that Cam Pettijohn is physically the most impressive prospect that I've covered, and he's an absolute monster. And holy crap, he's a junior. We're going to get one more year of him. All that being said, unless there's any overarching thoughts from this game, I'm going to move on into the D2 game. Walker Lot, you.
Just looking to the future, it's going to be very exciting to see how both teams are. For Parrish, you bring back Lucero, you bring back Phillips, but you lose your top three receivers, your starting running back, and a couple guys on defense as well, right? Drew Burton, Jesse Richardson.
Jackson McKinney, the sophomore, is going to be a fantastic running back for the moving board.
Absolutely. I'm excited to see him being that RB1 next year. I think he's going to be awesome. But in an offense that is just full of weapons, usually at the receiver positions, they're losing all three, right? We saw this with Liberty last year. You lose your starting receiver and running back. How does that work, right? And I'm excited to see how that works next year. They had Bray Spinks come into the fold in the preseason, and then he left for Anna. Maybe do you see him come back? I don't know. But it's going to be interesting to watch. And then on the flip side, for Prestonwood, I mean, you lose one of the Pettijohn brothers, Luke Glass, William Taylor is gone, AJ Morial, Junior Niffen is gone. But you bring some other guys back like Lineberger, Bixler, the other Pettijohn brother, right? And Cam comes back, who's going to be one of their best defensive players. You lose a lot of the offensive line, right? But you bring back Caden Smith, Abram Bingard, some others, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how both teams respond. How does the portal look kind to either of those teams, Bradley?
I will say on that last drive, you kind of talked about it how for the game-winning drive for Parrish, Logan Lucero had a big third down run. I think it was like third 10 plus. But that entire drive kind of showed us what Parrish is going to look like next year, I think. Even though you mentioned those receivers who are going to be moving on, like Beckham Smith, Jalen Pyle. But Lucero was just able to get the play every single time you needed it. He found the guy who was open. I don't think there was a single negative play on that entire drive because I remember I put it together and then we ended up posting it. Like Logan Lucero did everything that drive. He had that big third down run. He found Beckham Smith over the middle a couple times, Jalen Pyle on that fourth down, and then gave it to Phillips to punch it in. I mean, that's exactly what you want from your freshman QB. And we've been talking about it all year long. Lucero is not playing like a freshman QB. He's playing like a guy who's been in these spots before. And he definitely showed up in the state championship when needed most, by helping Parrish get that game-winning drive. So they definitely got something moving forward with the freshman guy.
Bradley, why is there a shot of Bex Prime in the middle of your recap of that drive?
I cut it out, didn't I?
You did not. It's on your feed.
Awesome.
I was watching through that just to like get a sense of what happened, and all of a sudden there's a 3 second clip of Bex Prime. That's fantastic. Your interview with Jalen
So,
Powell did very well, by the way. I want to shout you out on that. All that being said, Parrish is gonna be fine. Spoiler alert. They recruited a very high level. It's funny to me. I can say that openly just because that's the world that we live in. And I think, by the way, I think all teams should be actively recruiting. But also, like you mentioned, the talent they bring back, whether it's Phillips, whether it's Lucero, whether it's Jackson McKinney, even though you got to replace all the receivers, a lot of the offensive line's gone. They're going to be all right. Prestonwood will as well. It's going to be another fun season in Taps Division One. But we're going to move down to Taps Division Two, where we saw All Saints best Second Baptist. It did not feel like this for a while. I mean, the game started off 10-0. We went into the half, 10-7 after a Gavin Beard to Hatton French receiving touchdown. But Bradley, what was your nerves level at half when it's 10-7? Because I don't know if that's the right question for you because you don't make picks on episode. But when it was 10-7 at the half, even especially after it was 10-0 to start, I could see a lot of Eagles in our comment section. I was like, this might destroy the reputability of the program. I think walking did Ryan crash out on this game and say it was going to be like 50-0? I don't remember if this was a game he freaked out. Okay, yeah, he did. So yeah, that's
I guaranteed a 28-point win.
right. You did guarantee a 28-point win. God. So Bradley, we go into the half. It's 10-7. Cannon Tune is doing Cannon Tune things. But All Saints are starting to heat up a little bit. What's your thought process at this point in time?
I mean, this is kind of what I didn't, I'm not going to say this is what I expected, but I expected Second Baptist to kind of hang in there a little bit. I expected them to be down by a little at half, just because I know the level that the Second Baptist team plays at. And then I expected All Saints to kind of like gear it up in the second half and then kind of run away with things, which is what we saw inevitably. But I don't know. I was surprised for sure. Didn't expect Second Baptist to be winning, but as you mentioned, Tune was doing Tune things and he did that all game long. So I went over to the Second Baptist sideline to go shoot a video. And Kelvin Baptiste had like a big TFL to force the three and out. And he goes to dap me up because he knows me. I'm around Second Baptist all the time. Like we're chill. And then he's like, "Oh wait, you picked All Saints." And then he like swerves. And anyway, that was one of the funniest interactions that I had
Was the
at
swerve
game.
before he dapped you up,
It
or
was
like
before.
mid?
It was
Oh,
before.
so mid dap, he like swerves you and he like
Yeah.
clouds. Okay,
Oh yeah.
that's bad.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But I don't know. Kelvin's cool, but I just think it was funny. But I mean, it was definitely surprising seeing Second Baptist up 10-7. We were all kind of shocked, I guess I could say. Kind of just like the look on all of our faces. Wes, you were saying that the credibility of this program will be get completely destroyed if Second Baptist ends up like completely running away with it.
I did.
But yeah, I think there were a couple people that were definitely talking to us about that, i.e. Second Baptist cheerleaders, but that's not what matters.
Yeah, shout out to them for winning state, by the way. But yeah,
True.
it was a scary moment at the half. Walker, no, I'll cut to B first. B, I want to say that at that point in the half, was I a little worried? Yes. At the end of the day, I feel like my ultimate feeling was that All Saints has much more talent than Second Baptist. That's just an objective fact. They've steamrolled everyone. They've got to get it going at some point. I remember passing some of the All Saints dads on the sideline and being like, not a great start. And they're like, this is every game. We always start slow. They literally, without missing a beat, they were unfazed. I was like, well, I now feel a little bit better. It's crazy that I'm like, I was rooting for them a little bit, but like Bradley said, the credibility of the program rode on All Saints winning. That said, it was great to see an interesting game. But back to the original point, 10-7 at half. Did you think that Second Baptist was going to continue this, or were you like, All Saints really is likely the more talented team?
Well, I remember like watching the first three and out for All Saints and being like, wait, this is the team that we think has the best wide receivers in all of Taps. I was just very confused. I was like, this is the Cinderella like story going on here and they're losing to them at the half. I remember being very confused. We did our little halftime recap and like I just remember being like, what is going on? I was like, is somebody hurt that we don't know? Is there, is there flu going around on the All Saints sideline? What's going on at
Did
this game?
West Tolleson give them strep
Yeah. Did they all of a sudden all contract mono? What is going on here?
throat?
But you know what? That second half was, I think, what we all expected All Saints to do. They're clearly one of the best, if not the best, team in Taps. And I mean, it was just an incredible game. I felt bad for Second Baptist. They definitely had that Cinderella story, and they had that historic win over TWCA. And I think we were all rooting for them a little bit in our hearts, but all knew All Saints definitely had that one in the back for them.
Yeah, I mean that was a lot of the thought process. It didn't seem like a whole lot of people on All Saints were particularly worried, but maybe they were just good at masking it at that point. Bradley, in terms of the rest of the game, All Saints ended up proving they were the more talented team. They go out and win their second consecutive state championship. Who stood out to you in this one, and what was the major factor that led All Saints past Second Baptist?
I think the offense for All Saints, which is what we didn't see at all in the first half, we saw, I think, three straight three and outs. And I mean, the All Saints offense just they turned it on. We mentioned the play to Haddon French at the end of half to make it a close one. But then you have receivers, like they have the most stacked receiving room. We mentioned this multiple times. Gabe Starling, Reeser, French, like they have guys all around. And the big names make plays, and that's exactly what they did. Beard was able to do his thing, and he was able to sling the rock to his guys, and that's exactly what happened. But also, just like on the Second Baptist side, I think the big thing is what kind of ended this game was just they got banged up. I mean, we saw Cannon Toon take multiple shots. There was one drive, I think he got knocked down and stayed there every single play. Like it was a three and out, and he like every single play, you could tell that he was going through
Yeah,
it, but
each down was a worse hit than the previous one, and each time he was slower and slower to get up. It was, dude. I
yeah,
it
that's
was oh.
being on the receiving end of a hit from Kingston Byer should be it violates the precedent set forth in the Geneva Convention. It should not happen to another human being.
Well, yeah, talking that, and I'll let you finish, Bradley. It's like the first drive of the second half was a huge hit on him, forced fumble, the way they went down and scored. The next drive was the three straight hits. Like it was back to back to back, where they just set the tone that second half and said, "Sorry, buddy, you're gonna get hit the rest of this game." And it was a result, man. I didn't know. It was to the fourth in like the fourth quarter. I was getting scared. I was like, it might be malpractice to get him back out on that field because it was that bad.
And I do want to say briefly before you continue, it is perpetually insane to me that as good as this All Saints offense is, the best in the state, no weakness, the defense is just as good, whether it's Kingston Byers, Cade Colson, Gatlinger Hard, Jett Thomas, whether it's Donovan Hollis, Keon Atkins, literally just the names flow. There is no weakness on this entire team, which is why it was so shocking that it was close at the beginning. Continue.
I mean, that's kind of the story of the night in the second half. Second Baptist got banged up early, and then All Saints kind of ran away with it. But also, I was next to Walker whenever that like three straight hits to Toon happened. And we were saying, I wonder if they put Casey Dunn in. He's played some this season with Toon getting injured twice, and then Dunn played linebacker the rest of the game too. But like we were saying, I wonder if they put him in and just sit Toon out for at least one drive. And he didn't do that. That just like shows the type of guy he is, the type of player he is. He has that like grit mentality, and he's going to fight through everything to play in his last game as a Second Baptist Eagle. But then, like the All Saints offense, just as I mentioned, they just kind of ran away with it. You look at Gavin Beard; he had four passing touchdowns, 299 yards, and he only had five incompletions. Like this All Saints offense, they were dealing. Browse had over 100 yards. Reeser with three touchdowns. French had a good game. Starling had a good. All over, like this team is loaded, and because they have these guys on offense, and as you mentioned on defense, they're going to make plays, and that's what That's what happened. They end up winning this game big.
Yeah, I mean, Reaser with a monster game in his final high school effort. Six receptions, 66 yards, and three touchdowns. A 50% reception to touchdown rate is pretty good in my book. It's a fantastic way to end it. And the entire receiving room nuts. Pete, to cut back to you, I know I'm looking a lot in this game, but in terms of whether it's Second Baptist, whether it's All Saints, what else stuck out to you as All Saints really just proved themselves as the best team in the state, bar none?
I mean, I feel like we're not talking about Will Newhouse. I mean, he had the clip that we got on ESPN's top 10. I mean, this might have been the best game for him all season. He came out and absolutely dominated. I remember there was one point, I think I was standing on the All Saints sideline, and he made a tackle, and like audibly hearing people on the sideline being like, "Oh, like that's bad." I mean, he had an all-star game, truly. Kanan Toon, y'all already talked about it. I remember I was actually standing on the Second Baptist sideline. He gets hit, rolls his ankle, stands up, walks off, gets it double taped, and walks back on. And I was just like, yeah, this kid is insane. But he had a great game. I think All Saints really is just the better team. They had the better talent, and at the end of the day, they came to the second half and was ready to dominate, and that is what they did. Whether it was defense or offense, I think both sides of the ball was insane. It was a really fun second half. I really enjoyed watching it. And really, I mean, I think I said it earlier, I think we were all rooting for Second Baptist. Cinderella story. I think they started 1-6, but All Saints, they just have the better talent, and that's all I really have to say there.
That's
You
how it
mentioned,
goes.
I was just gonna say, she mentioned Will Newhouse. Like, he's been a guy who's grown up through this program. Like, he has been at Second Baptist for a good bit, and then he has maybe a career game. He had got a clip on SportsCenter with the interception, one of the five incompletions of Gavin Beard. But then also, just there were multiple PBUs that he had, big tackles, and Newhouse was flying. But the thing is, like, he didn't start for this Second Baptist team last season. Like, he was not a starting corner because they had guys like Vessel and Dishman. So he comes into that role, and then he actually had a very, very solid season. I got to watch numerous amounts of games from the second team, whether it be the Fort Bend game, LSA, or even the state game. But Will Newhouse has had a great season, and definitely credit to him for an amazing season.
Definitely so. Walker, I know both of us separately went up to Canton after the game. It literally just had to say, like, you are one of the, I think we probably said the word tough or dog or an iteration of it probably 7 or 8 times. I mean, just this game being the ultimate example of, and again, it sounds corny, but it's a warrior spirit. I mean, it's someone that's getting just waylaid over and over and over again to the point that it's almost like, just stay down, dude, please. And he's just like, nope, up, back again, run it, run it, run it. Been hurt the entire year, you know, even at a point where the game is out of reach, and he could very, very easily just be like, I'm done. I fought. I'm gonna take a break. It's just no. It's continually back out there, push, grind through it. From somebody that is one of the toughest, but also one of the most talented guys we've seen over the past 5 years covering the program, what do you think of Cannon Toon's final performance as Second Baptist falls 2-4 with All Saints in the finale?
Yeah, if you think about it, Wes, what's the first thing we remember about Kenan Toon, his freshman
A
year?
freshman in a semifinal game versus Fort Bend Christian getting absolutely massacred over the middle and getting right back up.
And that's kind of what he does, right? He gets knocked out and he keeps getting back up, and that's going to be his legacy there at Second Baptist, man. Making it him at the helm of the offense, getting to back-to-back state title games. I don't know when the last time that happened for Second Baptist. It's been a while, right? Like, I told him and Langston Davis what they did for this program over their careers, man, is something special. They're special players, man. They're gonna go play college ball in multiple places. And I mean, Langston Davis already has a couple offers. I think he might be committed somewhere, so I won't say too much about that. For Cannon Toon, I don't know how a Division FCS coach or that type of level D2, high D2 doesn't see Cannon Toon and say, I want that guy on my football team. I think that's a testament to him, what he brings to the table. Offense quarter, like receiver, quarterback. I know he plays safety. Whatever you want him to do on the football field, he's going to be a dang good football player, and he'll give you his all. And that's what he's done for this program. I hope the Second Baptist community looks kindly on those guys for the next couple of years and for a decade and remembers, like, hey, remember when Cantun almost died for this, for the eagle on our helmet? Like, and I like we've said it multiple times this season. I don't know why he's playing. I don't know, like, but it's just a testament to the heart of this kid. And being able to cover this guy for so many years and knowing the family and knowing him, he's a heck of a dude, and I'm excited to see him and his futures. Him with Langston Davis and the Jones brothers. They're that senior class. Is exciting things, man. And I think Casey Dunn's gonna be a heck of a player for them next year. I think he'll take the reins and he'll do them proud. But they're gonna lose a special talent too. And I just wanted to mention that. We mentioned kind of most of the game, so I'll look to the future of this things. Just like wrap it up here. I have no idea what Second Baptist looks like next year. Truly, with the loss of Beck Bryden, that's is a shocker for sure. You lose Toon, you lose the Jones brothers, you lose Burnett, you lose Baptiste, you lose Davis, you lose Alan Thomas. Newhouse is a senior, right? You have all these guys you're losing. I think you lose Griffin Lewis as well, one of the offensive linemen. I mean, you lose a lot. And we talked about last year, they lost a lot. And how do they respond? And I mean, for the first half of the season, not great, and the second half, elite, right? I don't know how this team's going to look next year. I'm excited to see how they do. I think the new coach is going to do fine, right? We talked about Coach Page and what he's going to do, and I think he'll do a dang good job. But I think it has to be different. I mean, Coach Bryden has his culture, and we talked about it last year when he first came into the program. It was not like Second Baptist had a bad culture, but you just have to tweak things to make it more instilled into the culture of the head coach, and that's just going to change here. It's just going to be a different culture, and I'm excited to see how it pans out. But it's a lot of question marks going into Houston, going into the spring ball. For the flip side, man, I don't think they slow down, Wes. I don't think they slow down. You lose Hudson Reaser, you lose Haddon French, but you bring back Gabe Starling, who, Wes, I don't know, is he wide receiver one next year in TXPS? He might be.
Starling,
He's up
there's
there
a
for
high
sure.
possibility. Schleif, it's crazy that I'm thinking of Lincoln Schleif in
Right.
D4 as a second possibility, but he's the first guy that comes to mind with Regents graduating all their guys. Yeah, there's going to be guys that are up there. Trey Finney, if he stays, will be interesting, but Starling's going to be on a short list of number one. And the only other guy on his tail might be Jaden Briles.
Yeah, and he's a sophomore, man.
I know.
Them two guys next year, whoever the quarterback going to be, if it's Cooper Griffin coming up to be a junior, that's really exciting. Everyone we've talked around the program has said he's a varsity capable quarterback. So is he going to be the guy? That's going to be interesting to watch. The running back position, they're going to have to get a new guy because both Billings and Burkholder are gone. That's going to be a thing to watch. Offensive defensive lines. I want to say, well, they lose this guy, this guy, this guy. They'll be back. If you think about this defensive line, man, you bring back Kingston Power, you bring back Kingston Byer, you bring back Ryan Powers, you lose Cade
How?
Colson and Gatlin Gerhard, I think. But everyone else you bring back, that's terrifying, man. You bring Keon Atkins leaves, who I'll talk about him a little bit more. He's an absolute dog. They just released the All-State list. We'll talk about more in a different episode. But he's the number one linebacker in D2 for a reason. He was legit this year, 120 plus tackles. He's one of my favorites this year to cover. DBs, I think they bring back a lot of them. They're young. They have a lot coming in. And guess what, Wes? People will want to come to All Saints, and it's going to be even
Crazy.
better. I don't know how that crazy how that works. So I mean, especially with the new how the schedule works next year and who's going to be week zero for them. They're going to play some dang good out-of-conference games, and they're going to show once again that they're probably the team to be in private school, man. They're a heck of a school. Coach Beck, he has that program on turning on all levels. Exciting times there in West Fort Worth.
He most certainly does. We will return back to Waco as we're going to move to the Saturday slate of games as 11 a.m. saw Dallas Christian, Lubbock Christian face off in a game where I think it was the only game that all four of us were on one side. No, nobody took Second Baptist either. So two out of the four that were all on one side of Dallas Christian, and the only one that we were all fantastically wrong on, although it was a very, very good game. But looking into it, you think about it for a second. You're like, Dallas Christian has killed everyone. Lubbock Christian's also done very well, but Lubbock Christian is down their number one quarterback. And then we're like, we know Jace. Ja I made a point to say Jace Jackson, the backup, has performed very well up to this point. I kind of left it at that, and I was like, still, it's DC. It is what it is. Jace Jackson proceeds to say, okay, the idiot on the screen might have said that and picked against us. I'm going to go out and rush for 126 yards, I think 3 touchdowns, and win the game 36 to 30. It seemed like literally the entirety of the game plan, Bradley, for Lovett Christian was to either snap the ball directly to Jace Jackson or Dede Atkins for them to maybe take a second and act like they were going to throw and then go into a design quarterback draw, quarterback run. I mean, it seemed like literally every single play was that. If I'm looking at the actual stats here for Lovett Christian, they had 31 rushes for 293 yards. They only had 11 passing attempts. So that's what, less than five, or that's a little over five per half. So not a whole lot going on. Bradley Hanna, but it ended up being a fantastic contest. Looking at it from the beginning to the end, what did you come away with as Lubbock Christian overturns the dynasty in Dallas Christian?
I think the big story was no one expected this. I mean, we all picked DC to win. I think the big reason is why, because Fleming was out. Like, we knew he wasn't going to play. But then you see Lovett Christian beats Bernie Geneva in the semifinals 71 to 13. You have a score of 71 to 13 in the semifinals against a solid Bernie Geneva team. That's not like a laughing stock of a Bernie Geneva team. So, I mean, that just says something about this Lubbock team. But then also, they just have guys. Like, I mean, Keaton Lee made plays. You just talked about Jace Jackson had a career game. I mean, state championship, of course, but then three total touchdowns as well. And then Dede Atkins, his brother Kamal Atkins, all of the guys there just making plays. And then also on the defensive side, you got your big guy, Major Tucker, of course. I think it's just cool to see this Lubbock team go out with a victory, because there's a lot of guys in the senior class who deserve a state championship. And it's cool to see them kind of dethrone the champion of Dallas Christian, who has won it the past four years. Is that correct? Five, four, four. Yeah. Okay.
Four. There's
Five.
a thumb there. There's a
Okay.
thumb folded in.
Okay. Four. But I couldn't remember if it was four or five, but just the fact that Dallas has won it 4 straight years, so you kind of wonder who's next. Like, does that kind of open it up for someone? Maybe a Holy Cross team. We saw them make state past couple years, but I think you just kind of wonder what's next for D3. I think Lubbock, they return a bunch of guys, so they'll be interesting to look out for next year. I think they got a good shot at running it back, but honestly, it's going to be really interesting. And then, yeah, I don't know. I mean, DC's got a bunch of guys returning back too. So, and Mike Wheeler always has his stuff ready. So D3 is definitely going to be interesting next year.
I will call myself out and say there's a clip from the Division III preview episode that I was half right and half wrong on, in which I said death taxes and Dallas Christian getting 17 kids in from local schools in the offseason, and they're probably going to win a state championship based off of that. Come back and clip this if I'm wrong. So again, the first half of that sentence is completely right. I think my uncle said like 15 kids from Forney itself. I reached out to some other people. I think it was more like seven, but still, I mean, I think they had like probably between 15 and 20 kids come in, whether that's Cooper Johnson, who's very fantastic, and other guys like Dylan Belt, who's homegrown, who's not a transfer, who's going to be one of the best receivers in TXPS as he matures. That's going to be one to watch on that receiver list. But I mean, ultimately, Bradley, I think you bring up a really good point in the semifinal win versus Bernie Geneva, where Lubbock Christian just absolutely emasculated them. And the tendency, and I think what I fell into was the tendency is to look at that win and say, well, yeah, that's impressive, but it's Bernie Geneva. But then you realize they've got guys like Caleb Kalamato and Brady Young, and really, it's the Division III South, so it's not great, but still, to smack a team that badly is impressive. I think that should have been a sign that Lubbock Christian was coming in here ready to dominate, as Dede Atkins and Jace Jackson did. Dede Atkins went for 14 rushes, 157 yards. Jackson for 1,526. B. Bateman, you also saw this entire contest. There was a lot of oddities in this game as well, whether it was 5,000 injuries for Dallas Christian or couple missed field goals. What did you see from your vantage point that allowed Lubbock Christian to get a 6-point win and a state title in Division III?
Oh, I mean, we're down there for pregame, and I'm hearing Lubbock Christian's head coach talking about how huge Major Tucker is. And I'm like, this kid can't be that big. And he walks right past me, and I was like, oh, okay. So I think that was just the start of it. I know all of y'all picked Dallas Christian, and I remember going into this game and being like, is this really going to be a blowout like they're saying it is?
We never said blowout. I want to make it very clear we never said blowout.
Okay, I take that statement back then. But I mean, yeah, Day Day Atkins, I think he played both sides of the ball at one point. He had an incredible game. They just kept putting him in, and he just kept getting more runs and kept getting more yards. And then Rhett comes down later and tells us he has like an unbelievable stat chart. I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. And like I said earlier, Major Tucker is like a huge man. And he is very scary, and he will he seeing him play was really enjoyable, I'm not going to lie. But yeah, I think, they had their starting quarterback out, and I think we were all like, how great is this Lubbock Christian team going to be? They hadn't really played many like great teams going into this, and so we weren't sure like their dynamic and really, like, if they could beat this Dallas Christian team that, like you said, has gone to state 4 times. But yeah, I think it was a really interesting game. I think at one point, I was sitting there and we watched another missed field goal, and I was like, wow, special teams is going real great at state this weekend. But it was an incredible game.
Very glad.
Had I'm
this
very glad
been,
that Ryan's not on this episode.
he'd be tweaking, dude. I'm really glad that this year wasn't last year at state, because in the preview episode for state last year, me and Ryan made a bet over combined missed field goals, missed PATs over the weekend. I think we set the line at like 4.5 or 5.5. There was like maybe one or two all weekend, just absolutely destroyed Ryan's bet. When this weekend, I think there was probably closer to I was gonna say 6 or 7, but I don't really want to invite that rhetoric on the podcast. There's five. There's actually five. So the bet would have cashed. Stop it, Walker. Would have cashed this year. But yeah, to your point, B, I think a major reason and something that's interesting to me is that Lubbock Christian's offense is it's not dynamic. It's not sexy at all. They do a few things, but they do them incredibly well. And that's in large part, you want to give a lot of credit to Jace Jackson, Day Day Atkins, et cetera. The lion's share of that credit has to go to guys like Major Tucker and Landry Stevens and company on the offensive line. I covered Lubbock Christian against Pantego in, I think it was early October. And I didn't fully clock how stout their offensive line was for a Division III team. You know, Major Tucker is, I think, like 6'5", 250. Landry Stevens is like 6'2", also 250. In Division III, you might as well be 300 pounds with that height and weight. And they just moved guys all night long. Like we said, Lubbock Christian rushed for almost 300 yards on 31
I mean,
carries.
I was going to add on to that. How many times did you just see pull Stevens over the side and run QB draw right behind him? I mean, there were so
Over.
many times after two touchdowns, I think, by Jackson was literally QB draw behind Stevens, let him run down the sideline. It's a testament to that offensive line, man.
Yeah, he is. It's funny. I'm literally like going through the tweets as we're talking to look at this, and like at least two of the touchdowns, it's that exact thing. Stevens pull, washes out the outside linebacker or the edge, and Jace Jackson just goes off his butt into the end zone. And it's like not the first time they've done this. They've got a lot of film on Jace Jackson doing this. It's just like it's even crazier to do that against Dallas Christian and not to like have to go into your bag of tricks and say we're gonna have to throw the kitchen sink at Mike Wheeler and Dallas Christian because they're so powerful and we have to pull it out. It's a baller move by Chris Softley and company to just sit back and go, you know what we're gonna run. We're gonna run it directly at you. Stop us. And they didn't. And it's incredibly cool. I do think it was cool post game. I heard Chris Softley talking to someone and he just went, little old Lubbock Christian, who would have thought? And I was like, that's a nice line to end all of this. Although I don't know, is Lubbock Christian, they're one of the smaller teams in D3, correct? We just did all this.
Yeah. I
So I was
think
going to say,
that
Little Olympic Christian doesn't make sense if you're all the same size in D3, but if they're the smallest, it does make sense.
Yeah, I think they're somewhat near the top of D3 nowadays. I mean, I can.
I'm going to choose to believe then that's because they were D4 a few short years ago and give Coach Softy the benefit of the doubt on that. But Walker Lott, I haven't cut to you yet. A thing I do want to hit on as well is there is, the leading rusher in. I think Stanley might have briefly overtaken Emerson Hadnott from All Saints, but we're going to say for all intents and purposes, the leading rusher in Taps Division III goes down early in this game with an injury, only ends up with, I think, like maybe 20 rushing yards this game. But then all of a sudden, Jackson Barr, the three tech, emerges as almost the best running back in the contest. Your thoughts on that dynamic for Dallas Christian as well as the game as a whole?
Yeah, to add on to it, I just looked it up quickly. They're near the bottom of D3, so you are
Makes
right. It
sense.
is little Dallas Lubbock Christian. And yeah, I think that's interesting, right? Where, yeah, DJ Stanley went 8 carries, 28 yards, and Jackson Bard 8 carries, 125 yards and a touchdown, right? What a game for him. It was next man up mentality, and especially with how many guys cramped for Dallas Christian that when you needed to, half
That
the
had to
time.
be at least like 10 separate instances,
Yeah.
yeah.
And speaking of injuries, Jackson Bart, has this great third quarter, I believe, right? And then in the fourth quarter, he goes down with injury as well, and he's out for the rest of the game. So their running game kind of went down. You saw them kind of rely on Sverd and, Sverd, and the rest is history. But like both teams had to kind of step up to the challenge and make things happen. Day-Day Atkins starting the game off spectacularly with the runs down the sideline to go win them this game. Jace Jackson had great nights as well. Keaton Lee at the end of this game, clutch down the sideline, makes the first down catch for like 15, and then finds him down the streaking down the sideline for the touchdown to ultimately win the game. Man, it's just they have so many weapons, both sides. You saw guys step up to the challenge. It was crazy, man. DBs, something especially to talk about. DBs for Lubbock Christian stopping Dylan Belt and other guys. I mean, so many times where they try to do some shot plays to Phoenix and Belt and other guys like that. And I mean, they still got his. Phoenix Pence went 7 receptions, 105 and a touchdown. Ryan Louie 2 for 42 and a touchdown. Dylan Belt 5 of 65. Dylan Belt probably had 11 balls thrown his way though, especially the one, the game winner for what is it, Elon Martinez, I believe is his name, right? To seal the game of the PBU. So many things had to go right for Lubbock Christian to win this game, and honestly, how many penalties at the end of this game and for DC, right? They kind of lost, beat themselves at some points where false starts, holdings, things just didn't go their way at the end, and Lubbock Christian didn't like let them have a chance to like regain it, right? They were like, if you're going to penalize yourself, we're going to take advantage of this. And you saw it all the whole game. It's a testament to them, man. So excited for the senior class, man. Major Tucker, Keaton Lee, Jason Flemings, and everyone over there, right? This was a big one for them. This was the time where I don't know if they're going to win it next year or how they're going to be. Day-Day Atkins gone. I think the star guy is going to be Kamal Atkins next year for this team, but the senior class, it was kind of the last time to say, okay, we might win it in D3, and they absolutely did. Storylines, I mean, they win, you lose one in overtime or fourth quarter pick six against Regents, right? You win four straight with Luke Kearney. Luke Kearney graduates, and you lose your first one afterwards. That's definitely a storyline to talk about there. Lubbock Christian, man, first one since back Townsend back backs Bax Townsend was at the
Max.
helm. Back in the day, and heck of a player he was. But yeah, big win for Lubbock Christian. Congratulations to them. I'm excited to see both sides. One last thing I'll mention. If you're a college coach and you're not watching, and you're a Division II or Division III head coach in the state of Texas, and you're not looking at Major Tucker, Day-Day Atkins, Keaton Lee, and Jason Flemings, what are you doing? Well, point blank period, what are you doing? Those guys are absolutely college-ready players to go play at the next level. If you're not offering them or at least watching their tape, I'm... You're dumb. That's how I'm going to say it. And that's a great way to end it. Bradley.
I will say, I remember Rhett, he came down after the game and he was like, I thought that number 12, Fleming, was supposed to be the QB. And I was like, yeah, he's the guy who got injured and he wasn't gonna go for this game. And then Rhett, he was like, Jace Jackson, he played like he could have been the starting quarterback all season long. And we talk about the QB draws a lot, but then he was also throwing the ball like crazy. I mean, he had what? I think one around 150 passing yards as well, a passing touchdown. I mean, Jackson, he balled out when needed most, and like huge shout out to him because I think it is because of him that Lubbock Christian won this game.
Yeah, no, I think there's a, I don't think there's a high possibility that is one of the major reasons is because of the emergence of Jace Jackson. Ultimately, maybe a good thing that he had as many reps throughout the middle of the season after Fleming got hurt in that Pantego contest because that really just solidified their game plan. Had that happened in the Geneva game, maybe there's not enough time to figure out what they want to do. I kind of doubt that, just considering the pedigree and the culture at Lubbock Christian. They probably had a replacement plan in place regardless of the situation. It is interesting though to take a full circle moment and go back 7-on-7, where Walker and I were sitting at the water cooler just thinking, what's Division Three going to look like this year? And we basically came to the consensus is that A, we don't know, but B, it's going to be some ranking of Lubbock Christian, Dallas Christian, and Holy Cross. It ended up being that, and Lubbock Christian ends up going out and becoming state champions. Really, really cool for all those seniors, especially after coming up short against Dallas Christian in the semis just that year. Got a shout out Keaton Lee, Jace Jackson, and the guys as we move on into the final game we're going to recap from the weekend, the night slate of the Saturday games. That's the Division Four title game between First Baptist and Brazos Christian, where I really don't know what I was doing here. I'll be
Hey,
candid.
let's start it off, right? Where's the coin?
The original one or the double-sided one?
Double
Well,
sided.
you could talk about both.
So to answer B's question, the double-sided coin's in my car. I probably should have had that on me for the episode, but yeah, Jason LaVorne. I also don't want to have that on me because Jason LaVorne did clown me in the post-game interview, which led to honestly a great screen grab. In terms of the original coin, I do want to make this relatively clear. I was sitting down. I think this was early in the second quarter or late in the first, and then I stand up. And then I hear something hit the ground by a storm drain, and I look down, and there's no coin on the ground, and there's no coin in my pockets, and I think that the coin went through the gap in the grate, and I think that basically caused Brazos Christian to lose the football game. I can see all the comments now from First Baptist saying that's an insane thing to say. I can't believe you make that excuse. I am absolutely making that excuse. Brazos Christian lost this game because I lost a quarter through a storm grate, and not at all due to the hard work and effort you've all put in since fall camp. It's because of the coin. It's because of the coin alone. It was never because of anything except the coin. God, and that's only because of how badly I got lambasted in the post game. That being said, ultimately, we see basically Bradley, what was the best team in Taps Division Four, and this dynasty, which I think has been the greatest collective team from 2023 until now in the history of Taps Division Four, in my opinion. You see Lincoln Schleif with three receptions for the three touchdowns, Dylan Jones six total touchdowns. Tucker Brown going off, Antonio Cobb with an insane interception in the first quarter, literally just off the top of my head. So many players, so many plays. Actually, I take that back. B, I'm gonna make a pivot and I guess enact some cruel and unusual punishment since this was your team that was on the receiving end of the loss from from Dallas First Baptist from the sidelines because you weren't covering this game because you were cheering in this game. What was your takeaway from this contest from the sidelines?
You know what? Going into this game, I had heard it was going to be an easy game. And many other things from the fellow Brazos Christian football team. And I was, you know what? And y'all can maybe agree with me on this or even say that I was for sure saying this before our game, that I had very little hope is probably not a great way of putting it.
You did. I'll give that to you.
I can't believe you're admitting this, by the way. I can't believe you're like, yeah, I just There's no chance.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we played them last year, and I was like, you know what? If it can be a better game than last year, hands off to them. Like, truly, I was like, okay, you know what? FA, they are known for being this dynasty. They obviously won last year. And so going to this game, I didn't have much faith in us. But you know what? We played way better than I expected. Hudson Jacobus had a outstanding game. And honestly, this whole senior class really had a great game for Brazos Christian. I'm trying to think. Reed Jackson, number 33. He was kind of one of those kids who had a great season last year and kind of, I don't know if it was more we were throwing the ball more or really what it was, but he had a breakthrough game, really. There was multiple times where I'm standing on the far end and I see Reed Jackson running right across my face. And you know what? FBA really had it at the end of the game. But it was a fun game getting to cheer my last game. But you know what? I knew deep down inside Brazos Christian didn't really have what it had to get it done, so.
Yeah, it's I do want to hit off. By the way, it's so crazy. I need to like I verify this at state. Walker, it's Brazos, correct? The O is soft. Okay, good. I'm just
Yes.
like I'm just making sure. I've never heard so, and you said a lot of people from Brazos
Yeah.
Christian say Brazos Christian.
Yes.
That's insane. I truly feel like I'm being gaslit. When I heard that, but I'm going to continue to say it my way. You can continue to say it your way. Someone is right. Someone might be wrong. I do want to go back to the first drive of the game, Bradley, where the game starts with a play I feel like I see at least once per game where there's a pass that's somewhat behind the line and then it's dropped. And then all of a sudden, I forget exactly who it was. And I
Micah
can
Sacks.
scroll.
Micah
Yeah, it was
Sacks.
Micah Sacks. Colden Dukia dropped it. And then I just remember very vividly kind of the thing happens where like it's dropped and then some people instinctively kind of go for the ball and then First Baptist is like, ah, it's an incompletion. Sacks picks it up and Sacks is like, I guess I should probably get this back to the official. And I see the entire Brazos Christian sideline going, run, go, run. And he just kind of like looks around. He starts running. It's like it was the meme from The Incredibles where the baby Incredible. I don't know the kid's
Jack
name.
Jack?
Yeah, Jack. Where Jack,
Jack?
I don't, is it Jack? I think. He like
Yes.
kind of starts running faster, and that's what it looked like.
Oh no,
That
are you
be
talking about Flash? Like the
Flash, yeah, the
no,
fast one.
Dash Dash Dash
Dash. It is Dash.
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 It's been a while.
I feel less bad because usually I feel like these are moments where I get clowned for not knowing movies, but now that everyone like doesn't really know, I feel better.
Yeah.
It felt like that scene is what I'm
Yeah.
trying to say, Bradley. That was an insane way to start a game, but ultimately, First Baptist comes back and overwhelms them with the amount of receivers and firepower that they have. What did you see from this contest?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, on that first play, I didn't even see what happened because I had an awkward angle of it. So I thought it was just an incompletion. And then when I saw Sacks running back with that, I was like, well, what just happened? And then I remember Ryan told me on the walkie-talkies that we had, he was like, that's a fumble return for a touchdown. And I feel like everyone was like in shock, I think. I think that's the best way to put it because
Yeah, that was
I
the only
mean,
sliver of hope I had.
yeah,
Well,
I
if
mean,
we're talking about it, the game started good for Brazos, right?
yeah.
It's 7-0. They go on the next drive. They get the stop, right? I think the punt or the first down or fourth down stop. You're like, okay, could get interesting, right? They come back on offense, and then First Baptist's defense kind of shut them down straight
Yeah.
up. But you're like, okay, we'll be interested, right? Then the next drive, I think they had a four and out or something like that. Again, you're like, okay, maybe Brazos Christian like can hold the line for a while, and I don't know if their offense is gonna hold, but their defense could maybe cause some chaos a little bit, make it close. And then I think it happened, like another cycle happened again, and that's when the scoring started happening with the Schlive touchdown. But
I want to say to that Schlive touchdown, what is so crazy to me is he had his DB beat so badly that the ball from Jones is like a little bit underthrown. So like Schlive has to like turn around and like kind of wait on it for half a second. And he's got like 4 yards on his defender, so it doesn't even matter. So he just grabs it and immediately just turns it back on and goes.
Back to you, Bradley.
I mean, yeah, you kind of said like once they got the scoring going, they didn't really stop. I mean, when you put up 62 points, you kind of have to have a game like that. But it was insane. And just like all the scoring that we saw, like we had trouble trying to find an offensive player of the game because there were so many offensive player of the games. I mean, Schleif, as you mentioned, had the three touchdowns, almost 200 yards. You have Colden Duka with a touchdown, 100 yards, and he's what, maybe the fourth receiver on that team. Like, you have guys having crazy games in the state championship. Jones had six total touchdowns, almost 500 scrimmage yards. But then again, that doesn't take anything away from this Brazos team. I mean, they honest. I said this in the post game. Like, they played a great game, and I will stand on that. I think Brazos played one of the best games that they could have. They were going at, like, quote, the Death Star. They were going against the Death Star in First Baptist, and I mean, they played phenomenally. I will say a bunch of those touchdowns came in late time, but then also First Baptist had a couple come in garbage time also. So, I mean, this is a game where Jacobus almost threw 40 times. Carson Ramsey had two touchdowns, 100 yards. Sacks had a touchdown, 100 yards. It was just a very offensive game, which is something that we didn't see much in the other games, I would say. So I feel like that was like kind of a sigh of relief, but just a phenomenal game from both sides. And First Baptist ends up taking it away, I think, just because they had the bigger guys, they had the more talented players. Yeah, that's really the story of the game, I think.
I mean,
Yeah, from.
it was, sorry for cutting you off. It was 14-14 with like 9 minutes left in the second. Like it was a
Yeah.
close game in the first half. I think something to mention there is the thing that kind of broke the straw on the camel's back to kind of let the flood happen for First Baptist was, you had the Tucker Brown forced fumble in the first quarter. That was kind of scary. The kickoff return where they somehow went to Tucker Brown's side and he went straight at him, forced the fumble, and they just didn't get the ball the back to chance to, take the lead, is that's when it was like, okay, this might be over. Because what Tucker Brown did the rest of that game, where he gets the forced fumble, goes down, scores, like it's what he does, man. And I think he if that guy, if Campeau didn't have like four sacks or whatever the second half to kind of call game, Tucker Brown's their DPO TG, if defensive player of the game, yes.
Yes.
Like he absolutely was dominant in that first half, and it kind of led to like, as after that the dam broke, and First Baptist kind of went away with it.
He
Wes.
also had a touchdown in the first half offensively.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because why not? Yeah, him and Harden Brown are two guys that I feel like don't get as much shine as they should, just because there's perpetually guys like Elijah Kaysen and Mark Rayson and Lincoln Schleif and Antonio Cobb and George Anagostis, guys that are really, really talented. But if you've spent any time around First Baptist, I mean, both Tucker and Harden, since they've been freshmen, pretty much have contributed to the back end of that program. Now we're seeing them make more strides on offense, but I mean, both of them are just
I
fantastic athletes.
truly cannot believe that Tucker Brown's not a senior.
No,
Like,
I can't either. Like,
he,
it's,
him and
I
like,
almost
and
called him that in that rundown.
oh, I think I did one of the time. Like, George Ananassis and him coming back next year is terrifying. I think that's going to be a scary sign. We didn't talk about George enough, really, in this one. Every time, Wes, I watch him, I go, he's the best athlete, like pound for pound athlete that is on that field most of the time he plays, right? Wherever he is, if he's running the ball, how he ran the ball in this one too, where like it wasn't just like carry the rock like this, put your head down and run for set 5 yards. It was like, no, I'm gonna make some guys miss and make some things happen. And I didn't see that the past couple of years. I think that's him developing as into a junior this year, and just like, I'm more athletic than most people on the field, right? And I mean, he's gonna be our DPOY. He's gonna be in the running for D4 MVP. And you saw in this one where he had 97 yards on the ground. How many tackles did he have in this one? He
He
had
had nine
nine
tackles in
tackles.
a TFL
Like,
and a sack.
it's disgusting, man, what he's done on this football field. And he's a junior, and he's a guy who's grown up in this program. And we talk a lot about the receivers that come in for First Baptist, with rightfully so. And but like guys like Dylan Jones, George, the Browns, like Micah Foster, have grown up through this program, and it's just finally the result of all that the work in the middle school and the elementary school ranks finally are here and the dynasty is here, man. And yeah, I mean, it's such a cool thing to see guys come through the program since middle school and, you know, are reaping the what is it, the fruits of their labor, which is really, really cool.
No, I mean, it is crazy. I know we give offensive and defensive MVPs for the state game, but if we had a total MVP, it's hard for me to imagine it's not George Anagostis. As you mentioned, 18 carries, 97 yards, 2 touchdowns. Casually has 2 receptions for 71 yards because why not? He's also got those 9 tackles, 1 tackle for loss, and a sack. I mean, he, like, I said this when I watched him play against Dallas Covenant earlier in the year. I do think he is the best linebacker I've watched since Palmer Nix. Now, I watched Cam Pettijohn several times since then, and Cam Pettijohn, as physically impressive as Palmer Nix was, Cam Pettijohn is even more so. So I'm going to put Cam Pettijohn in, like, demigod category. George Anagostis is the best human linebacker I've seen in a long, long, long time. I mean, seriously, like, I know there's some guys we talk about a lot. George Anagostis is getting to that point. He deserves every second of it. That dude is a bona fide Saturday player, and regardless of what level he goes to, I can see him being a 4-year contributor at a very, very high level. That dude is about that action, boss. So, all that being said, Bradley, I thought I saw you poking your hand up. Maybe you're just agreeing with something. Anything else you had regarding this contest?
Well, I was going to just say, George Anagostis, you mentioned the 2 receptions for 71 yards. That could be like 2 receptions for 100 yards and a touchdown, but one of them got called back for a taunting, but we had no idea. Yeah, quote unquote taunting, because we played back the footage so many times that we had no idea what it was.
So
But.
I want to say briefly, and I don't want to cut you off, but it's from somebody that has taken headshots of George, spoken to him. I think I've tried to do an interview before. George barely speaks.
Yeah.
Like taunting, he is the, and I say this and I mean it, like, it's not hyperbole. I know I exaggerate a lot. He is the last person on that field
Yeah.
that would get a taunting call. I don't think, like, he doesn't show emotion. Like, I don't think I've ever seen him show emotion on a football field, dude. Like, all I saw was he was running and he turned back, and I genuinely just think he wanted to see if there was anyone near him. And
Yeah.
I think if that's anyone that had an inkling or knew an ounce of who George Anagostis was, doesn't throw that flag. I just remember the flag went up, and I just heard somebody on First Baptist go, "It's on George." That was kind of the
I
extent
mean,
of it.
if you
Walker
look,
Lot.
his 2 rushing touchdowns, he literally just went like this, and then it was like, okay, I'm done now. Let's go to the sideline. Like, you didn't even see him celebrate that regularly. Like, it goes to the shows that point. But
And just
that's
like,
the
that's the definition of
connectivity.
someone who's made so many plays, offense and defense. He's like, "I'm bored of this. I do this all the time. Here's the ball. Let me go sit on the bench for 2 minutes."
Think, Wes, you said during the game, he's like, I think after that touchdown or one of them, you're like, I think George just wants to go home. I think he's done. Like,
He's like,
the work is done already. Like, let's just go home. It's
"I've
cold.
done everything I need to do here. I want to go home and lift more weights."
And just every single play, you see him, like, while he's going to the ground, just diving forward to get every ounce of yardage that he can. Just an absolute dog for sure. And they're lucky to have him back for next season. But ultimately, like, I think this game is just. I mean, I mic'd up Coach LeVorn pregame, and I think that entire pregame like video that we have of him just goes to show the preparation and how First Baptist felt going into this game. Like, he didn't seem nerved at all, felt very confident talking to all these guys, like, you're gonna have an amazing game, you're gonna play great. Make sure that you just like ball out today. And I think the very first thing that he said in that entire video was they call it a coin flip. And First Baptist, they showed you why it wasn't a coin flip, and they really just blew away this game.
I would like to say, I think Brazos Christian won the actual coin toss game.
Did they actually?
So,
Let me
if
look.
that makes Wes
I
feel
think,
better.
yeah, they did, and they decided to receive. That's really, really good. To that point, I say we're in the entertainment business. Like, I don't know what you want me to say. Like, I'm not saying I didn't think Brazos Christian was going to win, because genuinely, I talked myself into the fact that I thought it was close, which is why I did the coin flip bet. So I'm
So did
not going
I.
to give myself a cop out there. I will address now briefly what happened post game, which, shout out to Corey Thomas's dad, who's been very nice to me previously.
Yeah.
But the rundown of this is, I'm doing post game, and, like, literally post game probably goes for about 20 minutes where we're waiting for the headshots, for them to take all the pictures, celebrate, and then like interviews and stuff. The entire 20-minute post game, I hear somebody screaming at me from the stands, "Wes, I know you can hear me. Come over here." To which I was like, "I can hear you. I'm going to take photos right now. I will probably end up over there at some point because this is going to make a really, really funny clip." I continue to do so. The screaming intensifies. I think eventually I stop hearing it, but I don't think it actually ever stops. I do my final interview, and I think I was going to go over there. I probably wasn't going to just because I was like, I'm tired. I have strep throat. I want to go home. Somebody comes out to midfield and basically grabs me and says, "You're wanted over here." And I'm like, am I being abducted in this moment? And I was like,
Shout
I
out Red
guess I
Bull.
have no choice. So I'm drug over to the First Baptist sideline. Corey Thomas's dad is, I want to say fake irate, but you honestly could drop the fake off of that. We go back and forth. He's like, "You went against us. You went against the Death Star." I said, "I named you the Death Star. I think I can exercise my free will." Honestly, it is fantastic content. Outside of him saying, "I know you live in Sunnyvale," which made me uncomfortable. It was honestly one of the better clips. Go watch that on our socials if you haven't already. All that being said, yeah, Bradley.
But did you eat the humble pie?
We missed that opportunity. We definitely were going to get pie on this episode, and I was going to eat it. I'm glad, and I actually also told him I would eat the humble pie on episode. So I have no literal pie in front of me. I will take this moment to say the pick was incorrect. It was never a coin flip. I know critical little about football. Here is your my admission of apology. I don't know. I'm saying words at
Will you
this
say
point.
that Ryan Schroeder knows better football than you?
No, I cannot believe LeVorn did that again. That like I think that was partially just to piss me off even further, which he succeeded in. I genuinely that LeVorn has done more damage to this program than any other entity, including no context, because of that one right those four words he said to Ryan last year. That
Agreed.
being said, we've spoken a lot. Yes, Walker.
I want to wrap us up, and I wanted to say quickly that being able to know some of these Brazos Christian guys over the years, it's been awesome to cover them. Hudson Jacobus, especially, being a guy that was kind of the backup for a couple of years, figuring out where just go play something on the football team from safety to whatever, to finally being the guy this year. I mean, he's done exceptional work this year, and I'm excited to see. I've been excited, and it's been awesome to watch his journey up to this point. I mean, a guy who was literally his ankle—you could tell it was hurting him in this one—and he, like, I think he said in his KBTX interview, I believe, basically saying like, "My offensive linemen have done everything for me, and they're playing banged up. Why couldn't I? And I'm not gonna leave it. I'm not gonna leave this field for them." And I think that's a testament to his character, and that's gonna go a long way for this kid.
Yeah, he was
So,
still limping on Monday.
oh, I bet. Yeah. So it's a testament to him, Micah Sacks. Those guys, Grant Boeheim, the senior class that are then really, really cool this year, and done a lot for this program. And we talked a lot last year about, oh, the senior class that they had last year is so good, and it absolutely was. It's going to be hard to replace them. I mean, Jacobus and these guys really did a lot to replace those guys, and it's a testament to them. And they're going to be going down to some of the best to ever do it at Brazos Christian. I want a testament to them because they're 979 until I die. So. Heck of a season for those guys, and proud of them and representing the Bryan area really dang well for both sides. I'm excited to see how they do. Brazos Christian, they re replace a lot, but you bring back Reed Jackson, Slayton Caffey, Clark Palomo, some of the sophomores start, some freshmen starting as well. Like, it's gonna be really cool to see them next year in Division Three. I think they have a bright future ahead of them. Who's the gunslinger is gonna be the question, of course.
I'm glad they're in the South as opposed to the North in
Yes.
D3.
Absolutely. They have some time to adjust. The Holy Cross game next year is going to be interesting. I think they can compete absolutely in a lot of those Division Three games. I think they're going to be a top five team in Division Three next year if you really think about it, especially in the South where they can kind of take their licks being in a bigger conference and still overcome it. But yeah, the question mark is going to be the quarterback. Who's going to take the reins from Hudson? But I think Carson Ramsey might, if he can learn football, and he's learning on the fly, man. If he can learn the game of football, he's going to be one of the best players in Division Three next year, truly. And I'm excited to see that grow. Reed Jackson returns and all of the above. I'm really excited to see Brazos Christian. On the flip side, First Baptist is now alone with Brazos Christian gone. Central Texas, I think, goes down, and I think the dynasty runs for another 2 years. It's just going to be who's throwing them the football and who's going to catch it, because Dylan Jones is gone. They're going to get another guy in. Is it a guy from the in the program? Is it a guy like Hunter McCoy who comes in for 1 year? That's going to be the question. But you bring back senior George, you bring back senior Lincoln Shive, Colden Duwikya, Tucker Brown, Antonio Cobb is a sophomore. He was, by the
Nuts.
way, he's the only I there's three names on the All-State teams that made freshmen. It is Zach Williams from Bishop Lynch, who made first team All-State, Isaiah Mills from Regents, who made first team All-State in offense, shout out to him, and Antonio Cobb, who made All-State on both sides of the ball in Division Four. So a guy to watch there. But they have some guys coming back. They're gonna be good. It's just who's gonna be throwing them the football, and then who can make up guys like Micah Foster and guys like that. But the Death Star didn't get blown up this time. We're gonna have to go to the Battle of Endor in sometime in the future and see who if they didn't even need to rebuild it, but can they destroy it again?
Yeah, I'm done picking against First Baptist. I think by the way, they were also telling me that I know you picked who was it?
It's one of the kids that's like the rage bait. Is that what you're trying to say about
No,
that?
no, no. So they were saying, yeah, you did that to rage bait us so that we would ultimately win. I really didn't do that, but I mean, I did it to kind of rage bait them for content, but I didn't really do it for them to win. But no, I forget Corey's dad was saying, I think it was in 2023. Yeah, it was 23 when they played Lubbock Christian. He was like, you picked against us then too. I checked the tape. I picked first. We both picked First Baptist in that game. I was sitting in the room in there. It's me and you. Ryan was on his hiatus. I picked First
Oh, yeah.
Baptist. I remember that.
Yeah.
That being said, this is probably the last time I pick against First Baptist. An incredible team. We talk about dynasties ebbing and flowing and dying out. I don't see a path for that to happen in the near future. But also, I think Brazos Christian might find themselves in a better spot going forward, moving up a division, because First Baptist is better than every team in that division, maybe except for Dallas Christian and Lubbock Christian. Very, very intriguing spot for both squads. But gentlemen and lady, that is the final game that we have to cover for the TXPS 2025 season. What a ride it has been. We said this in our long gushy post on Twitter, but I cannot express enough gratitude to everyone that watches this week in and week out. You know, for all of you that come up constantly and say, we are so grateful for what you do, for shining a light, we are more so grateful for you, because if there's no one viewing this program or coming up to us at those games, there's nobody making all this stuff. So I want to say thank you to the community. I want to say thank you again to all of the interns, B, Bradley, Jake, Sean, Rhett, everyone that joined us at State,
Yeah,
including Jake Schroeder.
can I list out our interns a little
Yes,
bit more
list all of
too?
our interns by name, please.
Addison Harper, Austin Evans, B. Bateman, Bradley Hanna, Brillin Callender, Creighton Seegers, Daniel Gonzalez, Dax Morgan, Jacob Garcia, Jaden Villarreal. He's not an intern, but he counts anyways. He's in the group me. Luke Swick, Noah Villarreal, Rhett Terrell, Sean O'Reilly, Whitney Lager, and Lauren Holloway. Shout out to all of them for a great year. It's been awesome to have them a part of the team, and especially the people like you were just mentioning when I rudely interrupted the people that went to stay with us that really helped us this year, and I'm really grateful for all of them, Wes and Brett.
Absolutely. Like I said on the top, the amount of content we push out is probably a quarter of what it is if we don't have the help that we do. We're incredibly grateful for it. So that being said, B. Bateman, I'm going to turn to you first for final comments. Thank you so much for coming on. Your expertise and your analysis, not only in D4, but in Texas private school as a whole, propelled our coverage tremendously, not just on this episode, but the entire year. Any final comments as we close out the 2025 season?
You know what? It's been awesome. Seeing Waverly do it last year, I was like, I think this might be the coolest thing I've ever seen. So just being able to join has been like a phenomenal experience.
Fantastic. Bradley Hanna, same question to you as we move and we close the chapter in 2025. Your thoughts on the season?
Yeah, I mean, this is great. I mean, getting to cover with Eagles on the air at Fort Bend or here at TXPS, I've covered so many games over the past 4 years now. And just the entire experience has been great. Both state trips, either this year or last year. It's just been a load of fun. I love watching football, and it's fun to get to break it down with some people, make some picks, make some wrong picks, but get flamed for it, and then that's also part of the fun. I really appreciate the opportunity that we have here and just the experience that we get to have. covering private school football. I mean, I was talking to Rhett, and I think that honestly, this might be my favorite season out of all 4 years. And we won state my freshman year, so that's definitely saying something. But I mean, it's been fun getting to cover so many great games. I'd say my last game that I announced was probably one of the best games that I've ever watched. For Ben and ended up going down to Brownsville, but like honestly, it was a really entertaining game. Went down to the wire, definitely just like a roller coaster of a game. But then you go to Second Baptist LSA, all four state games, just load of fun, and yeah, just love hanging out with the guys and watching football.
Absolutely. And that I think is what State Weekend boils down to, is hanging out with our friends, watching football and talking shop. And there was a lot of that that was done. Again, cannot thank both of you enough for your contributions, as well as to all of our interns and student analysts at large. Thank you, thank you, thank you. With that being said, as always, I have been a quarter of your hosting crew, West Hollis, and Walker Lott, B. Bateman, and Bradley Hanna have fantastically been themselves. We will see you in the next episode. See you later.